This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions among our most popular podcasts. You know, Layla, I had an opportunity to interview yesterday Dr. David Perlmutter.
Oh, and, yay!
He's working on a bunch of projects. He's got a new webinar on Alzheimer's disease coming up in October. And it was nice to visit with him because we always have a great conversation. We're old friends and colleagues, and, you know, he looks forward to sharing all the exciting things he's been doing, and I like catching up with him. And he also has written an interesting book called Brainwash. Brainwash is an interesting book because he wrote with his son. His son is an internist.
He's a doctor, right?
Yeah. Austin Perlmutter, recent graduate. And he takes a little more philosophical bent in that book. You know, obviously, he talks about, you know, the diet, and he talks about supplements for brain protection. But he takes an interesting position. He says that what's happening is that we are becoming, as a society, more reflexive, more plugged into our emotional brain. And
how things feel.
To the detriment of our prefrontal cortex.
Yes.
And he says that actually studies have shown that in diabetes, when your blood sugar is bouncing around all over the place, you sort of revert to more your reptilian brain.
Yeah, you get hangry.
Yes. And, you know, also, you know, just the way that we are sleep deprived and due to our reliance on electronic media, instant gratification, we're being sort of conditioned, you know, like Skinner rats to seek gratification from the foods we eat, from the likes that we get on Facebook, and so on and so on and so on. And I know that you're a you're on a Facebook fast.
Yes.
Right?
Which, for years.
Which may be prudent, you know, when it comes to brain health.
I don't want to contribute to a dystopian future.
Right.
Of all that.
I, on the other hand, you know, post,
and I know.
I play the Facebook and Twitter game.
Yeah.
Try not to get too sucked into it, although I have to say that with my 50th high school reunion, I'm like following a lot more of my high school buddies.
Oh, well, that's fun.
It's fun, yeah. But it can be a little bit of a time suck. And, you know, it takes away from time spent in natural environments. And, you know, sort of we're spending time in our electronic world rather than in the real physical world. Anyway, so that's his new book. It's coming out in January. And, you know, he's always has great titles for his book, you know, Grain Brain.
Yeah.
And now Brainwash.
Yes.
And so, you know, he's just been a really profound influence on me.
And
great
myself,
teacher,
too.
And
I refer to him often.
Leader in this field. And he's still quite prolific. He's getting the word out. So look for that podcast. It's going to be a good one, Dr. David Perlmutter. But here we are with our Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the place where you can send questions. We're getting a lot of questions.
Yes, keep them coming. Thank you.
Because when the questions dry up, you know, we'll just have no raison d'etre. You know, we'll just vanish with the dinosaurs.
All right, go play handball or something. I don't know.
Take a walk in the forest.
Take a walk, yeah.
Right. But we enjoy doing this, and we enjoy answering your questions. Before we get to questions, though, I just want to share with you yet another perspective on what is kind of a controversy in nutritional medicine. which is you remember the Tums era for bone health.
Get your calcium from Tums. My mother was given that advice.
500 milligrams, 1,000, 1,500 milligrams.
Tums.
Take all day long. Take, right. 3,000, 4,000. It's all going to go in your bones.
Right.
And you'll have great bones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Turned out not to be the case.
Yeah.
So also concerns were raised over where is all that calcium going?
Mm-hmm.
Could it go into your arteries? After
yes.
all, we look at arterial calcification. We do the EBT heart scan to see if there's calcium accumulation in the coronary arteries. Could it be that all that calcium that they're urging us to take in the 80s and 90s, what could backfire, that it could actually accumulate in the arteries? And this is based on some studies by a guy in New Zealand who happens to be, reading his writings, he really seems to be a foe of supplementation. He's all about the osteoporosis drugs. He's done some studies which suggest that calcium and vitamin D don't do much for bone health.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I think if you have, if you hope to build bone, you probably can't do it with calcium and vitamin D. Maybe you can slow the progression to bone loss.
Yes.
Certainly if you're vitamin D deficient, you get no calcium, you might be
right.
more prone.
Mm-hmm.
People who are lactose intolerant and don't get a lot of dietary calcium may be more, it's a risk factor for osteoporosis.
And on a blood test, nobody is low in calcium. Nobody.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. It because the body adjusts.
Yes.
And in fact, we only absorb 1/7 of about 1/7 of the calcium that's in our diets.
Mm-hmm.
So throwing a lot of calcium at osteoporosis probably isn't a great idea.
Right.
So at any rate, it's gone back and forth. There are some studies that suggest that too much calcium increases the risk for atherosclerosis.
Yes.
Here's a study that pushes back on that, and that may be reassuring to people who take calcium. You know, we give some calcium to people who have osteoporosis,
we
but
do.
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
We generally go like maybe 500 to 750.
Right, but, and that's about it.
But we don't go 1,200, 1,500, you
no.
know, we don't do
no.
that anymore. So this headline, calcium supplementation appears safe for cardiovascular health.
Mm-hmm.
It's from MedPage, which is considered a reliable source, you know, conventional medicine approved. In this study, a group of 121 women, they were told to take 750 milligrams calcium per day, in addition to the 450 that they got through their diet. There was no difference in carotid femoral pulse wave velocity and carotid intima media thickness at 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's
see a problem?
Months.
See a problem with that study?
Yeah. It's only 12 months.
12 months.
It could take...
So,
What
if you do it for 10 years, 20 years, 30
exactly.
years? Okay.
Exactly.
So it doesn't completely exonerate calcium.
Right.
It just says that short-term, those changes don't occur.
Yeah.
So I think it's somewhat, and this is typical of controversial propositions in nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some studies that say yes, and there'll be some studies that say no.
Mm-hmm.
And so it remains controversial. It's not settled science.
Right.
That calcium is bad for your arteries.
Yeah.
What I can say is this is done in women, first of all, who probably are a little less prone to atherosclerosis. It may be less advisable for men to routinely take lots and lots and lots of calcium.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Absolutely.
Because men have maybe I'm just saying men have a less of a risk of osteoporosis, not no risk.
Yes.
We have plenty of men who have osteoporosis that we're working on to restore their bone.
Mm-hmm.
We usually test them later than women.
Yeah.
We test them at maybe the threshold maybe 65 or 70 as opposed to women who get tested at 50 to detect osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess I'm throwing that out as by way of reassurance that if you take a multi that has a modest amount of calcium, don't worry that calcium is necessarily going to deposit in your coronary arteries or
yes.
your carotid arteries.
Well, a way to ensure that the calcium does go to the right place for the most part, vitamin K.
Yep.
Vitamin K2
call it the crossing guard for calcium. It tells the
right.
calcium go to the bones and stay away from the arteries.
Yeah, and listen, if you're deficient in vitamin D, that's also another problem, because vitamin D is kind of like the bus that takes the calcium to the bones. And here we've got vitamin K as the crossing guard. Yes, kind of works like that.
Okay.
Kind of works like that. Back to school on the way to the bones for calcium.
Right. Yeah.
So,
in keeping with our fall theme.
Right.
And by the way, another study, it's actually not a study, it's something that came up on CNN. Does sunscreen really deplete vitamin D? And the answer is probably yes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And listen, everybody's walking around with a sunscreen of like 30 or 50. A sunscreen as little as 10 or 15 SPF, mm-hmm. forget 30, you're already blocking out over 90% right. of the sun's UVB rays. But listen.
And they wear SPF shirts.
Yes, they wear SPF shirts.
And we often see that in people who've been diagnosed with skin cancer.
Yeah.
But once they've been diagnosed with skin cancer, it's almost like shutting a barn door after the horse gets out. Mm-hmm. The damage may have been done, you know, in their 20s and 30s.
Exactly.
And teens. And right. it's only coming, the chickens are coming to roost later. So.
Most melanomas don't have to do with sun exposure. Most don't have to do with sun exposure.
Yeah.
So there's another thing to think about.
And that sounds like a controversial proposition. Clearly, there's, you know, if you fry yourself, you're going to damage your skin. But, you know, the paradox of melanomas developing on the soles of your feet or on your eyeballs or on your, you know, in areas where the sun don't shine, you know, like perianal melanoma, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little simplistic to say, you know, where there's actually SPF clothes now.
Yes.
You know, whoa.
I've seen people on the beach this summer with them
on. Like, I'm going to get skin cancer because my shirt is translucent.
She's going in with the whole thing on her. I'm watching somebody on the beach this summer going, wow, she's wearing
that.
Okay.
Okay. Is that like a Muslim garb?
You know, No, not at all. But she was white as milk.
Okay.
So, you know, I knew she was at least wearing SPF. Everywhere.
I will say this, is that looking at the, you know, again, my reference is for some extent, going to the 50th reunion was kind of like an anthropological experiment or mm-hmm. like a, you know, medical experience for me.
Uh-huh.
To look at the skin of the gals that I went to school with and the guys I went to school with,
mm-hmm.
The ones who came from Malibu and were surfers and were we call them heliotropes. They were attracted to the sun,
uh-huh.
you know, sun worshippers. They're kind of leathery and mottled. Yeah. There was one gal I saw, and my comment to her was, and she was wearing a hat, you know, and she had really nice skin, and she had very pale, beautiful skin, and mm-hmm. she's got to be
like
in her late
60s. Porcelain
skin, and I complimented her, and she was thrilled, and I said, you are a heliophobe,
uh-huh.
and she goes, Ron, you always used to use big words, what does that mean? You know, it's like, that's how I blew a lot of dates, you know, I'd come out with big words, and they'd say, whoa.
I can't date him. He's too smart.
Yeah, right. You know, he's an egghead. But, you know, I said, you're a heliophobe. And mm-hmm. she did understand. She said, yes, I've always stayed away from the sun. And, you know, mm-hmm. for that reason, you can get solar damage from too much sun exposure.
That's true.
Things that protect, you know, there are dietary things that protect. There's actually some studies that suggest that dietary carotenoids, in particular, astaxanthin has a protective effect. That comes from salmon.
Mm-hmm.
You can take it as a supplement.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of an external, an internal sunscreen.
Mm-hmm. I think lycopene is helpful.
Although we can't say that anymore because there were actually some companies that were busted for making the claim that by taking the pill, you could protect yourself from the ravages of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought it's dangerous because then people are going to, you know, take these supplements and not apply sunscreen and stay in the sun too long.
Yeah.
So they busted them. The FTC or the FDA mm-hmm. sent them warning letters.
Yeah. Well, too bad. Too bad about that.
Yeah.
But you can get your astaxanthin from wild salmon.
Yeah.
So that's a good
choice. It's what makes it red. And in fact, salmon, farm salmon's gray. They feed it astaxanthin to color the skin, make it look more natural.
Yeah, but you want to make sure if you're using farm-raised salmon can still be very dirty if it's not organic. And if they're using...
Higher in PCBs.
Right, higher in PCBs. But when they use astaxanthin there, that could actually accumulate in your retina. And your ophthalmologist can see it.
Oh.
Which is really something. This was a study that came out several years ago.
Too much astaxanthin.
And I was very concerned because I was eating a lot of salmon sushi and going, oh, I know I'm not getting wild sushi at my local Japanese restaurant.
But that might come from eating, from taking astaxanthin supplements.
That's true,
really
too.
Really concentrating the astaxanthin.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
But
I haven't quite made up my mind about astaxanthin supplements. But
it's like a fake astaxanthin they're using instead of the real thing for economic reasons in farm-raised salmon.
But isn't it bioidentical, the astaxanthin that's in the supplements, to the same thing that is in the salmon?
Well, it depends on the type of supplement. I'm talking about fish feed now.
Okay.
So I don't think that's going to be nearly as good as a supplement.
Okay.
And I don't think that's something that the salmon is...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So there is a study, where, you know, we're free associating here, astaxanthin plus berberine for metabolic syndrome.
Oh.
We know berberine helps, but it seems that there's a synergy of berberine and astaxanthin to attenuate insulin resistance. Kind of cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. We know berberine is great
for that. So enough free association. Let's get to questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send. You're going to get discouraged because you think we're just going to blab on and we're not going to answer your questions.
No, we're going to answer your questions. We have one from Tom. L-serine was Fortune magazine's cover story in its January 2019 issue. What are your thoughts about this amino acid, and would you prescribe it to your patients?
Well, it's interesting. There's also a new study that shows that people with a certain genetic type of neurodegenerative disease that's rare, 1 in 5,000 people have the gene that makes them have this, and that serine helps it.
Yeah.
Serine helps to prevent this neurodegenerative disease. Now, that's not ALS, and that's a relatively uncommon neurodegenerative susceptibility. There's also some evidence that serine blocks the neurotoxic effects of algae blooms that are neurotoxic.
Yeah.
And this is one eccentric theory of why ALS develops, is that because of neurotoxic algae blooms, and if you eat the fish that eat the algae, you're getting a lot of the neurotoxins, and that this is a cause
That's very interesting, because there's more and more algae blooms.
Yeah, and some of them can be really toxic and devastating. It can cause real problems. There was somebody wrote an account of how their dog went to a lake, and there was there was some algae blooms in the lake, and the dog happily jumped in the water and jumped around and frolicked, and within minutes was convulsing and died. Due to seizures.
Oh my goodness.
So luckily the dog saved the family, because the family could have happily gone swimming in this beautiful mountain lake that was had an algae bloom. And certain algaes have this. So this is a bit of a, when you buy a blue-green algae, you have to be a little careful. I think that the manufacturers of things like spirulina and blue-green algae products are hopefully screening for the neurotoxins.
Interesting. That's right. You want to source all of that very well, ladies and gentlemen. So there is something.
But, what's so interesting in that article is, so they write about the serine. And then at the end of the article, says, we strongly advise people with this condition not to use serine at this time.
So it's like,
because we haven't explored all the ramifications of serine supplementation, and that there may be some backlash or some adverse effects, and they often write that in scientific articles. They write something, well, this is very promising, and they're, but don't do this at home.
Do they do that to indemnify themselves?
I think to some extent they do that. Yeah, it's CYA? Like a CYA. Yeah, it's like, but I think, Fortune magazine is not the most reliable source. They tend to go for kind of sensationalistic clickbait stuff. Fortune magazine actually once published an article that was an account by one of my patients who had successfully treated for bipolar disorder.
Oh, wow.
And there was so much traction on that I got a torrent of patients with bipolar disorder. We read about your amazing treatment for bipolar disorder. And, I think it was just good bread and butter orthomolecular medicine. We put this person on a really good diet and exercise program. We gave them certain brain supplements, and he managed to get off medication.
Yeah.
And so, but, to say that I've got some infallible magic formula for every patient who has bipolar disorder, I would dissuade people from believing that, because bipolar disorder can be, pretty relentless and destructive, and sometimes people need medication.
Yeah, that's true.
It sort of depends.
Yeah, it sort of depends, right?
Okay. I mean, anyone with a mental disorder, they're going to benefit from a nutritional perspective.
Certainly.
And from a clean diet and
Because garbage in, garbage out, your nutrition has everything to do with your mood.
I mean, we've talked about essential fatty acids. There's some evidence for N-acetylcysteine as being helpful for that.
N-acetylcysteine, and especially for things like OCD.
For obsessive
compulsive disorder. Yeah. So that's interesting. B vitamins, magnesium, getting rid of allergens.
Right.
Gluten can sometimes...
So diet matters. Is it a panacea?
Absolutely.
Not necessarily.
No, but it'll certainly help and start you on your way so that you could wrap your arms around the problem and get better.
Yeah.
Get better.
Yeah. Less, you know, lower highs, higher lows.
Yes.
You know, sort of like your...
Tighten up
your
the
worst
the
day is going to be better than your worst day may be equivalent to some of your best days in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, Tom... Thank you for your question. We have another Tom. Okay. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. My creatine kinase, CK, is always above 400. My primary care physician changed my previous cholesterol medication. I tried skipping my cholesterol medication for 2 months, and it's still the same. I'm 67 years old, and I don't do any hectic physical activities. What are your thoughts and recommendations?
Well, it's very interesting. So, I've seen this. Mm-hmm. There's a blood test called CK or CPK, creatine kinase, or creatine phosphokinase. And CPK is something that's involved in energy metabolism, okay?
Yeah.
In the muscles in particular. So you use CPK. CPK used to be our major test to see if somebody has a heart attack. Now we've got newer tests called troponin, which can determine if somebody has a heart attack. But it is an example of muscle damage. Now, I had a very interesting experience in medical school. We had a guy come in, and he was feeling awful, and we did a CPK.
Okay.
And it was astronomical. So we said, oh, my God, this guy's having a heart attack. We put him in the intensive care in the cardiac care unit.
Wow.
And it didn't shake out. It was like, what's going on? And, you know, so we talked to this guy, and he was like a workman kind of, you know, Bronx inhabitant, and reticent in terms of telling his story. And we said, you know, did you do like some weightlifting, heavy lifting? Because weightlifting...
rhabdomyolysis.
Rhabdomyolysis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can also... rhabdomyolysis.
Yeah.
Because, you know, pronunciation is difficult.
Sorry.
Yeah. You've read it, but you haven't said it too much. So... we asked him, did you do a lot of exertion? And he didn't say anything. He was kind of shy about it, and he was embarrassed. And finally, you know, I got him alone, and I said, look, you know, what's going on here? You know, we're mystified because it seemed like you had a heart attack, but we can't see any heart damage.
Yeah.
But we don't want to let you out on the chance that you might have a heart attack. Can you tell us what happened in the hours before you came in? And he said, you know, I got to admit, I got in a fight, and somebody took a 2x4 to me and, you know, just whacked the dickens out of me. And, you know, we're on the ground wrestling, and I got kicked, and, you know, and so he had muscle damage.
Yeah. Oh, my.
So that's what CPK. So in the course of my medical career, I've seen some people who have high CPK, and I asked them, did you just exercise? Do you lift weights? Were you bench pressing? Were you... you know, did you just run a marathon or something like that? And they say, no, I absolutely not. Nothing like that. And so what I realized is that there are people who genetically are susceptible to what's called asymptomatic elevations in their CPK.
Yeah.
And so I dug up this article, 2016. It's from the Cleveland Clinic Journal, Approach to Asymptomatic Creatine Kinase Elevation. And what they say here is that CPK levels vary significantly by sex and race. Reasons include differences in muscle mass or total body mass. So some people may be very muscular, maybe have more. Physical activity raises CPK. Drugs can elevate CPK.
Ah.
Most famously, statin drugs.
Oh, yes.
Statin drugs in a 5% approximately of users of statin drugs will develop CPK elevations. They can be twice as high as normal. It can be up to 10 times normal.
Wow, because of the muscle damage that can ensue.
And it's a form of myopathy. Mm-hmm. There are also a variety of muscular disorders. Hypothyroidism can mm-hmm. sometimes raise it, but also hyperthyroidism
can raise it. That's interesting.
And they say neuromuscular causes are not always worth pursuing. In other words, after a while, you know, you say, well, nothing's going on here. We leave the person alone and we just go that it's genetic. Muscle biopsies to determine if there's really some muscle damage being done, or nerve conduction studies can be done to see if there's some damage. Mm-hmm. A condition called dermatomyositis can cause this. It's a muscle disorder.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can do DNA testing now. Then there's this thing called idiopathic hyper CPKemia.
Mm-hmm.
Idiopathic hypercreatine kinaseemia.
Yeah.
Which is fancy word meaning you just have high CPK and that's it.
And that's normal for you.
Yeah,
that's because you're unique.
Right.
Or something.
So just, you know, just leave it alone.
Just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, definitely statins will bring it out.
Yeah. Interesting. And so even though we skipped it for two months,
is it bad? Is it a sign of some muscle damage? I mean, it's a little more subjective. It's like,
yeah.
What's going on? Are you experiencing muscle weakness? Mm-hmm. Are you having pain in your lower extremities especially? Then that's a sign that you're having an adverse reaction to statins, which is genetically determined, not universal,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, warrants reappraisal of whether the statins are worth it to you. Because it's like, okay, maybe you're protecting your heart. Maybe you really need it, but maybe you don't. And then, is it worth it to go through life with achy legs and discomfort?
Exactly. And we've seen
achy muscles
patients
and weakness.
Both ends of the spectrum. Those who are absolutely intolerant to statins, no ifs, ands, or buts about that, and others who do just fine.
Yeah. It's very individual. Yeah. Very individual.
Yeah.
So it's not a universal property of statins.
Yeah.
All right. Time flies when you're having fun. We have to go to part two. Give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Is it necessary to take the cofactors of calcium at the same time of ingesting calcium? Because I want to reach my goal of 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day.
Oh, okay. We're going to reach back to the question that we took up in the beginning of part
that
one.
Study.
Yeah,
right.
That study. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today with Layla Mudin, radio program at AOL.com is the place to send your questions, and 877-726-8255, if you call that number, 24/7 now, you can also record a question. This is another way to get questions to us. Those are questions that we'll generally answer during our weekly radio program on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a wealth of options to get your question to us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.